This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will visit with Jan Moeller of the Louisiana Budget Project, and also Quinn Hillier, columnist for the Baton Rouge Advocate. They have viewpoints regarding the Jindal administration, as we are now a year and a half away from the end of the eight-year reign of Bobby Jindal as governor of Louisiana. The biggest story this year thus far with Governor Jindal is his rejection of Common Core, and I'm sure Quinn and Jan will have some thoughts about that to express as well. Also on the show, Casey Phillips of the Baton Rouge Walls Project. Some beautiful murals going up around town in some areas that have been neglected, and Casey has been at the forefront of this movement. We'll talk with him about that and other things. But now the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. Inkstershow at WRKF.org. Frank Barnett is producing, and our guests are Jan Moeller, who is president of the Louisiana Budget Project, has been for the last 2.5 years, and is a longtime journalist in his own right, and another man who's been a journalist and also a political insider is Quinn Hillier, who is now a columnist for the Baton Rouge Advocate, and in his first few months on the job has been largely a supporter of Governor Bobby Jindal. Good morning to both of you gentlemen.
Good morning, Jim. Morning.
Quinn, let's start with you. What's your take on the governor's rejection of Common Core?
Well, on substance, I completely agree with him. I've been writing about Common Core for 3 years now, and I think it's a disaster. On the other hand, my column this past week said I didn't necessarily like the means that Jindal took to slow down Common Core. He didn't really lift a finger in the legislature to try to stop it the right way legislatively, and now he's trying to do it by executive fiat. And I think he actually has the legal point on the contract, saying that that they did a sole source contract to get these tests for Common Core, and that's not legal. I think he's right about that, but I still think he's trying to do a run around the legislative process.
All right, you're fading a bit. Hopefully, we can get Quinn to a better location. So he says Jindal is right on Common Core, but doesn't like the means. Jan, the governor was largely supportive of this for a long time, and then he had a turnabout. Do you know what precipitated this? The governor has really not addressed that.
You know, that's probably a question that's better addressed to Governor Jindal. I agree with Quinn that the way he's gone about this and trying to do this unilaterally is the wrong way to go, and it has really seems to be causing a lot of chaos in the education establishment. People forget, you know, school starts in less than a month, and a lot of parents, I think, want to know, you know, what are their kids going to be taught? What are their kids going to be tested on? Mm-hmm. And this has thrown that question completely up into the air. And after the legislature, by declining to go along to cancel the Common Core, really spoke to that issue. And for the governor to try to go around. Now, we have a very powerful governor in Louisiana. Governors have a lot more authority here than they do in many other states. But even in Louisiana, there are limits on the governor's power. And I think our governor is trying to test those limits. And unfortunately, there are 700,000 children going back to school in public schools in Louisiana in a few weeks. And they deserve and their parents deserve to know what the curriculum's going to be like and what they're going to be tested on.
It was a week ago today at the Baton Rouge Rotary Club that Stephen Wagespack, the head of LABI, of course, was a Jindal insider for many years. He said this was no big deal, that Common Core was going to be implemented this year, and it turns out I don't think he's right.
Well, the curriculum, as I understand it, and I'm not the expert on Common Core, but the curriculum has been in the schools already. They started teaching it last year. The question is, what's the test going to be like? We've been having the LEAP test in Louisiana for years, and now we're going to be moving on to this PARC exams, or perhaps not, depending on who wins this battle. So the question is really about what the test is going to look like next year. And I think parents deserve to know. And you know, there's probably some good points to be made on both sides. Again, I'm not the expert here. But I will say this, as the parent of two young children who one day will hopefully be in the public schools, you know, I want to know how they stack up, not just against children in Ascension Parish and in Zachary and in Monroe, but how they stack up against children in Indiana and New York and California, because that's who they're going to be competing against in this economy for the next 40, 50, 60 years.
Quinn, the governor rarely changes his mind, and he has done so on this, and he has alienated many people who are supportive of him, have been in the past. Why did he decide to fight this battle? Why do you think he decided to draw a line in the sand on Common Core?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, you cannot rule out the idea that he is trying to play to national conservative audiences, because he probably wants to run for president. That's not giving him the benefit of the doubt. And I think that calculation is in there somewhere. I do also think that on the subject of the sole source contract for these Common Core tests, he actually has probably a legitimate legal point. But on the overall issue of Common Core, look, a lot of people have changed their minds after actually seeing the rollout of it. They liked it in concept. They didn't think about it hard enough. And then they saw the Obama administration try to hijack it with, by tying Common Core to the race to the top fund, basically trying to federalize it. They actually saw what the concept was of the math, which is absolutely outrageous.
All right. Quinn, we'll hopefully get you to a better location. I think most of our listeners, if not all, can hear what you're saying. And Quinn is saying the governor changed his mind like a lot of other people. But, Jan, he changed it at literally the 11th hour. As John White said, there were two outs in the bottom of the ninth.
It certainly was a quick turnabout, although it seemed to be a process of about a year. I think it was last fall when he started questioning it, and for a long time reporters weren't exactly clear where he stood on it, and then finally, right after the session, he came out squarely against it. Again, the motives for that, that's something to bring up with the governor, but it certainly seems like Common Core is very unpopular with the Republican base, but it's also unpopular with teachers' unions. I mean, there are some really strange bedfellows here where you have the business community and the chambers of commerce lining up behind the Common Core and the tests associated with it. And then on the other side, you have the teachers' unions who've been the governor's big enemy on the voucher stuff and his 2012 education plan. Are with the governor and with the far right on this issue in opposition to Common Core. So you have some really interesting alliances on this, and it'll be very, just from a political standpoint, it'll be fascinating to see how this turns out.
John White has managed to keep his job, but he's been messed with by the governor. You know, now what, anything above $2,000 he needs approval for to implement in his office, which is a huge part of state government, the Department of Education. Do you think White is here for the duration of the Jindal term, or is he a goner?
Well, the governor can't fire John White.
Can't directly fire him.
That takes a vote of the BESSE board, and the governor has some influence over the BESSE board, but I don't believe he has the votes to get rid of John White if he wanted to, and I don't know that he wants to. And John White, to his credit, is sticking with, you know, he's not running for any office that I'm aware of, and is sticking to his guns on this issue. I have no idea how long he'll stay on the job, but I certainly wouldn't be surprised to see him here when the governor leaves office.
And Chaz Romer, also supportive of the governor in the past, the president of the BESSE board, a card-carrying conservative Republican, just as the governor, and an Ivy Leaguer. And they're about the same age. You're apart, have a lot in common, but on this, certainly they've split the sheets.
That's a good way of putting it. And again, this has not been something that the Louisiana Budget Project has gotten involved in. I look at this more from the perspective of being a parent and also being the husband of a public school teacher in East Baton Rouge.
Well, what about the governor's issue? And by the way, he brought this up long after it already had been in the process, but saying that this was not put out for bid, the testing apparatus, and that as a result, it violates state law. Is that just finding a way to block this, or does he have a legitimate point, as Quinn says?
You know, this is a governor who sole-sourced the contracts for about $1 billion worth of business in the charity hospital system. I don't recall when they were privatizing 9 of the 10 hospitals in the charity hospital system that the governor was concerned at all about the public bid laws, but suddenly when it suits his political purpose on this issue, the public bid laws is something sacrosanct and something he's willing to go to the wall for. So I think there's a little selective amnesia perhaps on the governor's part on this. That's not to say that the contract was done in the best possible way, but this governor certainly has taken both sides of the issue when it comes to the public bid laws.
Quinn, I think you heard Jan's comments about the governor having selective amnesia when it comes to public bid laws, enforcing them in this case and ignoring them in others, according to Jan Mohler. Does Jan have a point?
He might have a point. I'm not familiar intimately with exactly how he's been about doing this contract for the hospitals, so he might have a point there. As I say, I do think legally he probably is on the right side on the testing contract, but that may or may not be what was really driving
it. All right. What about somebody challenging the hospital contracts now and using the governor's own words to hang him with?
You know, I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know about that. I think the privatization is probably a done deal, and we'll have to see how those work out for the hospitals. I was merely pointing out that the governor has taken two sides of the issue, and I don't recall that being something he was very concerned with when we were talking about a billion-dollar charity mm-hmm. hospital system and who was going to manage that going forward.
Will this carry over into his presidential administration? Will people still be asking President Jindal about this seeming change of heart and having one standard in one case and another in a different case?
I don't know how concerned the rest of the country is going to be about our charity hospital system, but certainly Common Core seems to be a huge issue with the Republican base. And the Republican base, of course, is who you're trying to appeal to when you're a candidate in the primaries. You know, we're getting way ahead of ourselves. We don't know for sure if the governor is going to run for president, although it certainly looks like he plans to. And it looks from this vantage point that a lot of what he's doing right now is speaking more to the primary voters in these early primary states than perhaps the voting public in Louisiana, who are not going to have a chance to go to the ballot box again and vote for him for governor.
Jim on Airline. Hi, Jim. You're on the air with Quinn Hillier and Jan Mohler. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how you doing, Jim? I have two comments, one on Jindal and the other on the Republican message this year. I would like to ask somebody out there to start a new recall on Jindal. I think it's about time. On the Republican issue, I'd like to point out something, that they haven't had a legitimate issue to help the people in many, many years. First, they go against gay marriage, then they go homosexuality, they go against abortion, and now this year it is federalization. The Fed is trying to take over anything, and I'd like everything. And I'd like to point out the federal government is the only institution large enough to protect us from
the private sector. All right, do you have a question, Jim?
Yeah, I'd like to ask Quinn Hillier how he gets off writing a column that's so terribly distorted on the...
All right, he says your columns are distorted, Quinn.
Well, I mean, all I do is I put out my opinion, back them up with as much evidence as I can. I think most people would say I get my facts right, and it's just a question of what conclusions you want to draw from those facts. In terms of the caller's point about the federal government being the only institution large enough, it's a good thing. It's also the only institution.
297-5633 is your number outside the area. It's 877-217-5757. We apologize for the phone line with Quinn Hillier. We may have to grab him at another time, Frank, but we've got Jan Moeller to talk about what's happening in state government, and of course there are some budget issues permeating as well, and Jan is president of the Louisiana Budget Project. Back in 90 seconds on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number, 877-217-5757, and inkstershow@wrkf.org. Jan Moeller with us, the president of the Louisiana Budget Project, and a listener notes that for all the conversation in many places, including on this show, not much was done on the payday loan front during the legislative session. There doesn't seem to be enough public outcry to get the legislature to move on this one. Why is this lobby so strong to be able to keep these exorbitant interest rates in place?
Well, we're talking about 961 storefronts, I believe, around the state. There was a report that came out just on Monday by the legislative auditor that looked at the way these this business is regulated, and it found that they really aren't very well regulated, and that when they violate state law, when they overcharge customers, and they found over 8,300 times when customers were overcharged, and not a single time was the business penalized. So we have an unregulated industry that takes a lot of money out of low-income communities from vulnerable borrowers who go to these lenders as a last resort. But all these fees that they collected were able to buy a whole lot of lobbyists. They hired more than three dozen lobbyists to fight the bills that were in the legislature, the reform bills that were filed this session. And it seems like that had a real effect on the debate. The debate got further than it had any time in the past. There was a lot of activity, certainly got more publicity than it ever had in the past. But in the end, it fell short in the legislature. The legislature decided they didn't want to take the steps that may have hurt this industry, but in turn protected consumers. That's unfortunate, but we're going to be back, and sometimes the good bills take a few years to get through the legislature.
297-5633 is your number. Ellen in Sherwood. Ellen, good morning. You're on the air with Jan Moeller.
Good morning, Jim. I just want to comment about two things Quinn Hillier said about Common Core. First of all, they're not federal. It is not a federal program. They're state standards. They're excellent standards. I'm in education, and I can tell you teachers and people in education feel that Common Core standards are excellent. They're rigorous, and they're good for the students of Louisiana. Now, the teachers' unions were against them not because they were against Common Core, but because the standards are so rigorous, they didn't want the students, while the teachers and the students were getting used to a higher level curriculum, they didn't want them to be penalized. That's why the teachers' unions were not wanting the standards to be implemented exactly, you know, and the students might be not ready for the standards quite yet, but they will be ready. And they have already been benefiting from them in the past few years. I wanted to make that clear.
All right. I haven't seen a Governor Jindal turn around on an issue like this since he had a change of heart on the pay raise for lawmakers back in his first few months in office. Remember, he said, no way, I'm going to step in the way, and then he ended up vetoing the pay hike. And he has chosen his battles carefully through the years, and on this one, he has a lot of Republicans who are jumping up and down saying he's doing the wrong thing, and then you have people like the teacher unions who have not been in his camp, Jan, who are probably privately applauding the governor for doing this. So This is a reminiscent of the Clinton and Dick Morris triangulation thing.
Absolutely. It's such a fascinating issue. And I would agree with your last caller, Jim. My wife teaches third grades in East Baton Rouge Public Schools, and she's had the same experience with Common Core. She's gone through the training, and she's been very impressed by the new standards and the curriculum that's followed. So in our household, and again, this is speaking more as a father and a husband than as the director of a nonprofit, Common Core seems like it holds a lot of promise for lifting Louisiana past its ranking near the bottom of all the education indicators.
297-5633, Bridget in Mid-City. Bridget, you are on the air with Jan Moeller of the Louisiana Budget Project.
Mr. Moeller, I'd like you to speak to the possible reinstatement of the Scully Plan at some point. It seems to me that once we got rid of the Scully Plan, our budget process really started going down in the ditch. Let's hear your opinion about that.
Bridget, I couldn't agree with you more. The repeal of the Scully Plan, as you know, happened in two stages in 2007 and 2008. And over the first 5 years, it cost the state budget more than $2 billion. And I think you're right. When you look at the chronic budget problems we've had really since 2009 and continue to this day, a lot of it is rooted in the Scully Plan's repeal. And again, this is not a knock on Governor Jindal. In particular, this was the Governor Jindal, Governor Blanco, and every member of the State House and Senate voted for that repeal at a time when Louisiana's budget was artificially high and some would even say bloated after the post-Katrina economic rush. The problem with reinstating Scully, as you know, is that any kind of tax increase requires a two-thirds vote in the legislature. It can only be done during fiscal sessions, and we'll be in a fiscal session next year. And next year is an election year. So I would love to think that this is something the legislature could do. But, looking at it realistically, I think that would be a long shot at best. And so, unfortunately, if we want to solve this structural deficit, and there's $1 billion of one-time money that's in this current year budget that's not going to be available next year. So the budget headaches that we've been experiencing in recent years, there's really no end in sight. But if we want to tackle that structural deficit, I wish we could have a discussion about Scully. Unfortunately, I don't see it happening during this administration.
Interestingly, I was looking over some material from the 2007 campaign when Governor Jindal was elected and defeated Foster Campbell and Walter Boisseau and John Georges, and the governor had nothing in his campaign literature saying he would do away with the Scully Plan. But John Georges did. He advocated doing away with the Scully Plan, so obviously Governor Jindal has evolved into accepting something that was in the Georges Plan, as I hold it in my hands right now. And John Georges' newspaper has on its op-ed pages said this, getting rid of the Scully Plan was bad. So this is an interesting development as well. But Jay Darden was the Senate floor leader on the Scully Plan. He's running for governor, and he is now saying the Scully Plan was a bad thing. He's running away from his own plan. That's a curious development, Jan Moeller.
I hadn't heard that, actually. And
he says it wasn't revenue neutral, but it was never thought to be revenue neutral.
And that's exactly right, Jim. My understanding of the Scully Plan, and it actually passed the year before I moved to Louisiana, so I'm going from history, but the intent was always for it to be revenue neutral in year one, but then in the ensuing years for it to start bringing in more revenue than before. And of course, this was one of the last true progressive tax plans that this state ever passed. It got rid of the regressive sales tax, state sales tax on food, drugs, and residential utilities, which was a tax paid disproportionately by low-income families. And in exchange, it took away some deductions and raised the top rate on middle-class and upper-class taxpayers, the wealthiest taxpayers. And it did what it was supposed to do. It balanced the state budget. It brought in enough revenue that the state could start investing in things like higher education, in teacher pay, in pre-K education, And these are the real building blocks for a strong economy. You can't flip a switch and grow the economy overnight, but if you make these patient, steady investments over time, the economy is going to grow, and we're going to be lifted off the bottom by investing in education and educating our people, and that's what's going to bring us forward.
Hopefully we'll have Lieutenant Governor Darden on the show again soon, and I think a question for him is, why doesn't he say, I would try to reenact the Stelly Plan? Because that, according to many, is the source of the budget quandary we have right now.
Again, this was, I don't think we would have seen the Stelly Plan repealed, or at least the upper income portions of the Stelly Plan repealed, had we not had this economic surge that we had post-Katrina. If you remember, after Hurricane Katrina, we had billions of federal dollars coming into the state. We had the Haynesville shale coming online. We had oil at $140 a gallon. We had billions of insurance proceeds coming in as people were rebuilding their homes. And all of this economic activity brought our budget to heights that we had never seen. We were going on about a $7 billion general fund, a little over $7 billion, and all of a sudden we had a $10 billion general fund. We had more money than we knew what to do with, and when there's that much money coming into state government, I think there's going to be a lot of pressure to cut taxes, to give some of that money back to the people who are paying it. And what everybody knew at the time, but nobody wanted to discuss, was that this was an artificial boom, and everybody knew that as sure as the boom was here, the boom was going to go away, and then we were going to be left to pay the bills. This was a tragic mistake. I kind of understand why they did it, but I wish they hadn't done it.
Well, as I read the Georgia's Plan for Tax Reform and Fiscal Responsibility from 2007, number 7, repeal all remnants of the Stelly Plan, all remnants of the Stelly Plan, from John Georges, publisher of The Advocate. Mike, downtown. Mike, good morning. You're on the air with Jan Mohler.
Yeah, I'd like to make a comment on three different subjects. My wife and myself are both college-educated engineers. Our daughter just finished 8th grade in public school. And as far as math went this year, our daughter did not have one single night of homework the entire school year in math. And I'm like, just having done so much math in college, I find that absurd. And our daughter's becoming like confused now. She's a good student, an AB student. Another subject on the English, it's like I've never seen, I guess this is the transition curriculum into Common Core, we've never seen so much use in double negatives. There was some homework that had two double negatives in one sentence, and I'm like, that's a form of trickery. The kids are getting confused. Another homework assignment in geography, my wife and I, my daughter couldn't find the right correct answer to a question. My wife and I looked at it in separate occasions. We weren't sure what the answer was. I brought the homework question to work the next day. Asked two engineers at work. One was an amateur astronomer, and the question was on revolution, rotation of the moon and the earth. And between the four of us, we couldn't find out what the correct answer was. And lo and behold, the teacher says, well, I posed this to the teacher the next day, and she said, well, that's the book's answer. I said, well, you had four college-educated engineers find the reverse to what the book's do. I'm just thinking what the state the kids are in. And interesting quote, I saw a teacher on ABC News, and the quote was, my kids used to love math. Now they hate it.
All right. What about it to Quinn Hillier? Excuse me, Jan Mohler. I got Quinn on the brain. But Jan, what's your thought on the expressions from Mike downtown?
I think they're probably very good points. My kids are a couple of years away from starting school, so I haven't had the joy of helping my kids with their homework. I look forward to doing that in a few years. And I hope by then they've solved this Common Core dilemma, so we have some clarity on how they're going to be tested and on what they're going to be tested. But I really couldn't speak to the specific problems that Mike and his family have encountered with this curriculum. But I look forward to finding out.
All right. John Williams writes, Jim, the Stelly Plan was sold to the legislature as being revenue neutral, which is why it passed. Actually, I can recall interviewing people in which it was plainly stated that it was not revenue neutral, that it would grow with the economy, and that's how the tax base would be sustained to take care of needs of the people of the state. But nonetheless, John continues, it effectively transferred taxes from corporations to individuals. A friend of mine saw their income taxes, state income taxes, go up $15,000 the first year. It was a gross overreach by corporations to shift their tax burden to individuals, and people were screaming. Is that an accurate portrayal of what happened?
I would love to have my state income taxes go up by $15,000 because it would mean that I was making a whole lot more money than I'm making today. But one other point that I would make about Stelly is that this is not just something that passed the legislature. This was voted on. This was a constitutional amendment. The people of this state in 2002 voted to raise taxes on upper income taxpayers and to take away a regressive sales tax on food, drugs, and residential utilities. So this is not just the legislature talking. This is the people of Louisiana went to the polls and spoke on this issue, and then the legislature decided to reverse the will of the people by repealing the Stelly Plan.
And it was promoted by a Republican governor, and of course Jay Darden is a conservative Republican, not a free spender, and he was the Senate floor leader. And Vic Stelly is by no means a liberal either. So it was not a tax and spend kind of thing. But there are people who claim, rightly or wrongly, that their taxes went up significantly. And in any kind of tax plan, Quinn or John, they're usually winners and losers. And in order for the government to get more revenues, they have to get it from somebody.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no question that some people paid more under Stelly. I don't think anybody would deny that. And again, my understanding of Stelly has always been that it was billed as revenue neutral in year one. But as you said, over time, the revenues would grow as the economy grew. And I don't think the people of Louisiana who went to the polls in November of 2002 were ignorant about what they were doing. I believe they knew exactly what they were doing and that they wanted to stabilize the state tax system and bring in enough revenue to pay for basic needs. State government has to balance its budget every year. They don't have a choice. This is not the feds where you can run a deficit if you don't want to pay for everything that you plan on doing. In state government, you can only spend what you take in. So if you want to invest a little bit more in education, you want to build more roads, you want to do more things as a state, make those long-term investments, you have to raise the money. And then there was a public debate about how we should raise that money, and there was a vote of the people.
HB in Denham Springs. Hi, HB. You're on with Jan Moeller.
Good morning. Just one quick question. Why isn't the legislative committees on budget more receptive to Mr. Kennedy's solutions to put us on better financial footing for the state of Louisiana and restore the cuts to higher education?
Well, I believe that bill this time made it all the way to the governor's desk to cut the contracts, if that's the bill you're talking about. I think it got further than it ever had
it did,
in the
but
past.
It was changed dramatically.
It was watered down quite a bit, and it made it to the governor's desk.
By the way, with no dissenting votes from either the House or the Senate, and Governor Jindal vetoed it.
Absolutely. I think the treasurer should be... Are we running out of time?
No, we've got a few seconds here.
I think that the treasurer should be commended for making so many recommendations, but the governor holds a lot of sway over the budget process.
He typically
puts his allies on these committees.
Right. We'll take 90 seconds as we pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. In just a bit, we'll hear from Casey Phillips of the Baton Rouge Walls Project. Jan Moeller with us for a few more minutes, the president of the Louisiana Budget Project for the last 2.5 years. And when he left his post with NOLA.com and the New Orleans Times-Picayune, he was slammed in public with a live mic by Governor Bobby Jindal.
Well,
who usually doesn't go off script, but he was so passionate about what you were doing, he was not a fan, was he?
Well, I think people who just see the governor in at press conferences or speaking to the country fail to realize that he has a sense of humor. So I trust that the governor was joking when he made those remarks. And for my part, I'm willing to let bygones be bygones.
What did he say? What did he say?
He was a little critical of me going to work for the budget project and called me some names on a live mic or.
Well, what if you'd called him names? Would that have been funny?
That's a good point. I would not call the governor names. I have lots of respect for the governor.
You had your chance to challenge him to an arm wrestling competition right there. And my money would be on Jan. 297-5633 is your number. Frank Barnett, can you tell me who is on which line? And we will proceed when I get the information from our stellar producer, who is intrepidly gathering the names of those waiting in line to talk with Jan Moeller of the Louisiana Budget Project. Randy and Zachary. Randy, good morning. You're on with Jan Moeller. Hi, Randy.
Good morning. My question for you is concerning the group benefits, the state health insurance program for employees, retirees, and independents. There was an article in Sunday's Advocate that said that their reserves had been in excess of $500 million and now are close to hit $55 million years in if there are no adjustments being made. My question to you is, this time around when the legislature looks at this, do you think that they should pay more attention to the details instead of just taking the administration's word for it that things will be A-OK without really looking at the details? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Randy, I think you make an excellent point. There's no question, and we found out this spring, that one way that this administration has been balancing the budget is by tapping into several reserves. It's not just group benefits where they've burned through almost $500 million in reserves. There's also the Nursing Home Trust Fund. Almost $800 million has been depleted to keep the healthcare budget in balance. There was the upfront lease payments for the charity hospitals to keep that system running. So this administration, in many ways, has made a mess of the budget and living on borrowed time and borrowed money to keep things in balance. I honestly don't understand what's conservative about that, but this is going to be something that either the legislature next year and certainly the next governor is going to have to deal with this and try to get the budget back into shape.
Steve Wenham, the former budget director, calling from St. Francisville. Steve, you're on the air. Good morning to you.
Jim, I'm a little out of breath. I'm out on my bicycle, but real quick, if maybe Mr. George's, when he talked about getting rid of all of the Skelly Plan, meant to reinstate the sales tax. And on the sales tax itself, had it remained as it was, it would have grown. But it wouldn't have grown as rapidly as the income taxes would.
Well, I'm reading his 14-point plan, and there's nothing in here about reinstating a sales tax. It's all cap property.
Well, that's a remnant of the Skelly Plan.
Yeah, well, repeal all remnants of the Skelly Plan, John Georges wrote in 2007, easing the tax burden on families and individual filers. So he was in favor of the repeal of Skelly before the governor was. And what you're a bean counter of the first degree. Was getting rid of Skelly a good thing, Steve Wenham?
Absolutely not. As a matter of fact, it was the best piece of legislation that we've passed in decades.
And it was, if I remember correctly, in 2008, the governor, much to, I think, his chagrin, he did not put the brakes on it. It got out of the committee, and then it got on the floors of both houses. It passed, and then at that point, the governor took credit for it, and if I remember right, Joe McPherson, a Democrat who was pushing the repeal, he called Governor Jindal, quote, a whore. So it was Democrats who pushed the governor into a corner, and some say that the power of the governor is such that if he had operated more adroitly, he could have stopped this in committee.
I remember the day in 2008 when that repeal bill got out of the Senate committee, and you could practically hear the buzz going through the Capitol, and I believe that it was a rookie mistake by a rookie governor. They had no intention of letting that bill out of a committee, but once it got out of committee and went to the floor, it just became politically very difficult to oppose. So, again, I think if the governor had a do-over on this, he would have worked the committee harder and made sure that that bill got bottled up and never saw the light of day, and it would have saved him from a lot of headaches on the budget mm-hmm. over the next 6 years and counting.
And for those who say this is some kind of a Tea Party move, it was Democrats who largely pushed this out, and so there
was a Republican senator, as I recall, who sponsored the bill, but it was bipartisan. I think every member of the House and Senate voted for that repeal bill.
And I think some did. To make the governor take a stand, and obviously he's not going to sign off on something that is viewed as a tax issue. He can't do it based on his pledge to Grover Norquist.
Yeah, no, it was. It has definitely put him in a box. It has put the legislature in a box because politically it's almost impossible to get a two-thirds supermajority to raise taxes. Of course, cutting taxes only takes a majority. And again, I think the governor... he maybe couldn't foresee all of the headaches that would come from doing this repeal. But let's not forget, this started the year before, in the last year of Kathleen Blanco, when they also had a $1 billion surplus, and they did away with the deductions. They restored the excess itemized deductions, which was another part of the Stelly plan, and also cost the state hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions, over the last few years.
All right. Thank you, Steve. Hopefully we can have you as a guest sometime soon. Steve
Winter. Okay, thanks,
Jim.
Thank you. And I appreciate everything Jan does.
He's a good man, and he's expressing his point of view. And Bobby Jindal would say it's a far leftist point of view, but but it's a point of view that I think has it certainly has the capacity to be discussed or be expressed on a show like this. But in the Georgia's plan of 2007, there are just one tax... break after another. I don't know how we would have funded state government if he would have gotten all 14 of these points in, because there's nothing in here about any kind of a tax hike. And you got to have some sustenance to keep the beast alive. I think maybe George's and Lanny Keller should go around the state debating his top editorial columnist. That would be, I would pay good money to see that.
I think I would pay for that as well. But I think it speaks... very highly of John Georges that he can buy a newspaper and let it operate independently and let the editorial board come to their own conclusions and not be bound by something their boss said 7 years ago.
Maybe there'll be an op-ed editorial in the Advocate criticizing the publisher for leading the charge to repeal Stelly. Paul Anopoulosis. Paul, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning. Two questions. In the city of Opelousas, where we have THRS technical school, we're fighting to keep it alive right now. Is the higher education bill a little bit too high in the state of Louisiana, where you can have technical colleges, THRSs, junior colleges, and four-year colleges? Is there some point we just can't afford all of this?
I would disagree with your caller there. I don't think the problem in Louisiana is that we have too many colleges or too much higher education. I think the problem is we're not graduating enough people with college degrees, technical degrees, and associate's degrees. The research on this is very clear that the states with the best economies, the highest median incomes, are the states that have the highest percentage of college graduates. So if Louisiana does one thing with its dollars and makes one investment, it should be in education. And again, this is a generational project, but the more we can get people to graduate college and do so without debt, the more we're going to have a stronger workforce and a stronger economy in the future.
All right. And finally, a question from Jonathan saying, who in the world gave you the Georges plan? He did when he ran for governor, and I kept it. Because it's a very beautiful piece of campaign literature. And when you read it, John Georges campaigned as a fairly conservative man. And he is a man who's done very well in business, tried to be governor, tried to be mayor of New Orleans. Maybe he'll run again. And it would be quite interesting to see the choice of the advocate as far as endorsements if their publisher ran for office.
That would be fascinating. But in the meantime, as a consumer of news, I have to say I'm enjoying the competition, the fact that there's a genuine competition here in Baton Rouge between two newspapers and in New Orleans between these two newspapers. I'm hoping it brings out the best in both. But as yeah. somebody who loves newspapers and has always loved newspapers, it's great to see real competition.
Yeah, that's true. It's great. And as much as John George has wanted to cut taxes, he has not cut the budget at The Advocate, and I think that's a very good thing. We need more investment in good journalism. So,
absolutely.
Well, way to go. Thank you. Appreciate it, Jan Moeller. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Jim.
We're joined in our remaining moments by Casey Phillips, who's led the charge for the Baton Rouge Walls Project. And if you drive in certain parts of the city, you can see evidence of some tremendous artwork, murals by the dozens now. And Casey, it's becoming less and less of a hidden jewel. It's something that's right before our eyes, and it's certainly spruced up some areas that needed some sprucing up.
Well, absolutely, and that's it. I just wanted to say thanks, Jim, for having me on the show today, and all the support the WRKF family has shown to the Walls Project the last few years. So,
well, how did this come about?
Sure. So, you know, the Walls is a collective of artists, business leaders, and community volunteers. We're dedicated to stimulating the creative arts economy here in Louisiana, and we're doing so by delivering murals, sculptures, and building installations, obviously, that you've seen driving around town, that we hope inspire urban and rural beautification, dialogue, and eventually a unified city.
Well, is this something that's been replicated in other places? Are we copying other cities? It didn't happen by osmosis, did it?
No. And if it, as much as I would love to claim the patent to murals, I think that the ancient Egyptians with their hieroglyphics kind of cornered that market. So, I mean, you know, we're seeing a global movement of public art. It's always been around, but the amplification of it, it's becoming one of the voices of the 21st century artists, not just here in Louisiana, but, you know, in a worldwide movement. So.
Well, the murals in Baton Rouge, for people who may not have seen them, what are some of the most prominent locations?
Sure. So with our project, you know, one of our signature murals is the huge Baton Rouge Blues harmonica that was sponsored by Raising Cane's and the Bell of Baton Rouge that you see as you drive over the Mississippi River Bridge now. That was painted by the master, Robert Dafford, out of Lafayette, Louisiana, who's done over 300 murals in his career. And it's a sister piece to the huge clarinet in the CBD of New Orleans. So,
who's doing most of the painting?
Well, I'm very, we're actually really proud to say that, that since 2012, all of our murals were done by artists that are from or living here in Louisiana, and then a handful of our collaborative community murals obviously features the creative skills of 1,000-plus women, men, and children that come out and volunteer with us. So, you know, our artists are juried by, you know, obviously a board of their peers. We had our first call to artists in 2012, and we actually just completed our next call to artists. That'll be for our 2015 and 16 projects.
I noticed there's a spectacular mural on the side, one of the sides of the Lincoln Theater, and it, of course, is in disrepair and needs to be renovated in the worst way, but at least there's some nice artwork, and it's across the street from the Museum of Public Art. Did your project have involvement in this?
You know, no, we didn't actually. What Dr. Kevin Harris and the Museum of Public Art is doing in Old South Baton Rouge is absolutely mind blowing, and I kind of agree with the assessment of Jan earlier. Just like how the Advocate and the Times Pick have kind of been good for the consumer, right, and for the general public. You know, the Museum of Public Art doing what they do in Old South and across the city, the Red Stick Mural Program that's lifted off in East Melrose, and the Walls Project, you know, these are all three concurrent programs that, you know, have created quite a landscape. And
again, everything in the Lincoln Theater and the surrounding area, mind-blowing. So we love it.
Well, yeah, so it's a collaborative effort, and the Walls Project has taken hold in another way from a different source in Old South Baton Rouge. Even saw, I think it was a mural of Joe Delpit, which is great, not far from where he grew up. So it is a way for the community to look much better, and it takes a lot of work to put this together. This doesn't happen overnight. You have to really have some thought and planning.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That is the understatement of the day right there. And it is, we learned, you know, I mean, we were just like a startup company. We were just going to do a couple of murals in 2012. And then what, you know, then we actually made the commitment to growing this into, you know, an organization that's going to be sustainable for years to come. So
how many are there right now? We're short on time, Casey, but how many,
yeah, sure.
How many are there right now? How many murals?
Sure. Yeah, we've done 15 murals so far.
Well, I'm sure there are more to come, and we will look for them and hopefully have occasion to talk with Casey again. Thanks for listening, everybody, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.